When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
I know you're paying attention to global events as well as what's going on in our nation. War and increased conflict is bubbling up in more places. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals. Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Buck Sexton Show. Very pleased to have joining us for this deep dive into all things that matter, our friend Carol Markowitz of the New York Post, also co-author of a fantastic book that all of you should be checking out, Stolen Youth, and a refugee from New York City to Florida. She helped lead the charge. Carol, great to have you on the program.
Hi, Buck. Thanks so much for having me.
I feel like we could start with your book, if that's all right, just because right now there are some areas where I want to get conservatives to be paying a lot more attention. And the indoctrination, I'm doing research right now that's going to be comparing the brainwashing of totalitarian regimes to what Democrats are doing. Like, I'm actually very deep into this. I'm looking very closely at parallels and things. But
so,
what they're doing to our kids.
That's the first chapter of the book.
Tell me about it.
So it compares totalitarian regimes to what the left is doing in America right now. And it particularly compares where the totalitarian regimes of the past have always tried to sever the connection between parent and child in order to get the child well indoctrinated and to get the parent kind of removed from the whole process. As you know, I was born in the Soviet Union. This is really personal to me. And it is a history of my family that I've heard about my whole life, that was always part of it. The removal of the child from the parents was very important. And that's how you got them.
Yeah, I remember actually reading in the New York Times, or it was a New York Times sort of throwback to their assessments back in the early 80s of universal child care in the Soviet Union. And there were people, this is not something that anybody would talk about anymore, of course, but there were American liberals who were like, hey, look at the great universal child care the Soviets had. Right. And it was a very important part of the Soviet machine because they wanted people they wanted men and women to be able to go do these, you know, factory jobs or bureaucrats or whatever it was that they were doing. So they just plopped all the kids in to train them that this horrific system that they were all in was great. And the parents got to make, you know, really poorly functioning widgets all day at the factory.
So it's funny because, you know, my parents, whenever they would read these kinds of stories, would be like, I would love to see one of these people who like these, you know, I mean, my parents didn't say this, but I'm saying it now, like the quinoa eating, you know, $5 coffee every morning at least, $30,000 preschool plus parents see what this Soviet childcare looked like and the people that took care of your children and what they did all day and the food that they ate and all of that, and just the setting, the grim, gray, unhappy setting that these kids were in. My parents are always like, I'd love to see any of these proponents of the system actually send their kids to something that looked like this.
And yet here we are now, I think, seeing more than ever that the progression goes from, why are you guys making, I've really noticed this a lot more in the last few years than ever before. Why are you making such a big deal out of this? This is what the left and this is the, you know, the Democrat core will say whenever we start to recognize something. And certainly when it comes to teaching kids certain things in school, and, you know, meaning whether it's CRT or really aggressive radical gender theory stuff, or even the you know, drag queen performances for small children with full grown men with, like, you know, their backsides bouncing around in the faces of small children. At first, it's, why are you making such a big deal out of this? And then eventually when they do it enough, then they just start to say, yeah, this is what we do now. This is really important to us.
Right. It's also the, this isn't happening, it's good that this is happening. Yeah. Like, switch. It always starts with, what are you guys talking about? This is totally not happening. Nobody's trying to take away your gas stove. And then, you know, Kathy Hochul in New York puts together her budget and it phases out the gas stove. Suddenly it's good that this is happening. It's good for the environment. It's good for your air. You can breathe better, etc. And they do this on so many different levels and constantly. There's so much gaslighting. And I have to say that, like, my whole life, I've had times where people have asked me, like, doesn't this moment feel very Soviet to you? And it was like the 90s and the Clinton years and whatever. And it didn't. It really didn't. But this moment does. And it's creepy and the walls seem to be closing in on our society, where you can only say certain things and you can only say them a certain way. And conformity is so important. And the left is just making our society ever more conformist. And it is very reminiscent of the stories that my family told. Very.
Well, this is why with COVID, it has reoriented my whole framework for American politics. You know, before that, I felt like the Kavanaugh moment was a very important political shift that many of us experienced. I know it was just one Supreme Court seat, one Supreme Court nomination.
No, it was eye-opening.
But it was eye-opening because you had the entire Democrat machine. I call it the apparatus, right? Soviet, apparatchiks, right? The apparatus.
Exactly.
But the apparatus of the Democrat Party so obviously went along with the most absurd smears and lies about, whether you like his jurisprudence or not, a good and honorable guy who just didn't represent what their needs of power, didn't represent what would give them power. And so they just decided to destroy him and feel good. And Kamala Harris was a part of it. I mean, Cory Booker was a part of it. There are people who are still held in high esteem by the Democrats. What they did was horrific beyond words. I also think with COVID, what we saw was now I worry that they would do anything to destroy, you know, your neighbor or you or your family member if it meant that they could have more power. That's what Kavanaugh showed us. But then with COVID, it was, they'll believe any lies, go along with them, either propagate them themselves or be subservient to them in the cause of the collective. That felt very Soviet to me. That felt like something that I didn't expect to see in America, all the COVID madness that you and I have talked about so much.
So we have a COVID chapter in the book, and you're absolutely right. And there were moments like, if Donald Trump wants schools to open, then the Democrats don't want schools to open. And the Democrats were against public schools. I mean, when did that happen? How did that shift happen? And it was only despite him. And it's wild to look back at this now and see that their special interest group allies and teachers unions got them to support closing down public schools while private schools stayed open. It was just mind-boggling to, like, look back at this and see that this actually happened. So yeah, I agree that it's they'll do anything in the pursuit of power, anything to indoctrinate these kids. And I don't see a bottom here.
I was gonna ask, do you believe that a lot of the people Randy Weingarten, perfect example. Does she actually believe it when she says that she's doing things for the benefit of children? You, I mean, you and I agree she's not. But does she think? Does she think she is, or is it all just a con, a lie, an abuse, propaganda meant in the pursuit of power for the left and for the collectivists?
So it's hard to say, especially with her. She's sort of George Costanza, a lie is not a lie if you believe it kind of situation, because she now says that she was for opening schools. And once you say that, once you say that you're Randy Weingarten and you wanted to open schools all along, she says that she's been wanting to open schools since April 2020. And you believe this, really believe this? I mean, it's sociopathic behavior. She did not want schools to open school year 2020, but it's important to remember she did not want schools to open school year 2021 either. She wanted them closed for the second school year. And, you know, thank God for Ron DeSantis in Florida leading the way on opening schools, because the rest of the country might be locked down for that year as well. They would have just not had an example to look to and been like, well, this is how it works. This is how schools open and kids get to go back to school. And we don't have to listen to Randy Weingarten.
I want to ask you about the CNN syndrome in a second, Carol. But first, I do have to take a moment for our sponsor here, American Giant. American Giant's incredibly comfortable hoodies are a necessary addition to your wardrobe. Look, I'm all about comfort, and American Giant delivers on that. Get yourself hooked up with one of American Giant's classic full zip hoodies or one of their newly released relaxed classic full zip hoodie. The newest one, by the way, is perfectly crafted for the days you get home from work or you just want to be comfortable as you're running around town. Both made with incredible quality and durability. One's just a slightly roomier fit. It'll remind you of your favorite college sweatshirt. Carrie's got mine. She wears them all over the apartment now all the time because, you know, they're just big and comfy. You're going to love them. American Giant makes everything in the USA, and they obsess over every detail in construction of these garments. American Giant's more than just hoodies, flannels, sweaters, joggers, tanks, sweatpants, and everyday denim. And they're so comfortable, you're going to absolutely love them. And you should just go get some American Giant as soon as you possibly can. You'll get 20% off at AmericanGiant.com and use my name, Buck, as the promo code. AmericanGiant.com. Use promo code Buck. You'll get 20% off. You're going to love this gear, love these hoodies. Speaking of gear, before I get into the CNN effect, Carol, Carrie, my new wife, which we'll talk more about, this is very exciting, just got married.
So exciting.
She saw me today, and I didn't even think about this. She saw me, and she's like, you need to change. And I was like, why? She said, because it looks like Zelensky is walking around our apartment wearing a kind of olive green T-shirt right now. And then this morning we were having coffee together. And I was like, come on, what do you mean? Like, I need to fight against the Russians. And I was, she was like, now you're really freaking me out, right? Like, you get like a Zelensky thing going. But
you got to work on the accent.
Oh, come on. That's pretty close, I thought. You know,
he's very low. He's down here. He has like this very gruff.
Anyway, I know. See, you actually are former Soviet. You know the intricacies of the accent. I guess my Fauci and my Zelensky probably sound a little too much alike. But yeah, now if you wear an olive, like drab T-shirt anywhere, you're apparently channeling Zelensky. Okay, so the CNN effect. Also, wait, before I get to that, what do you think about these wedding bands that are made of? So I have the platinum wedding ring that I'll wear now when I go out and all that sort of stuff, I guess. Mm-hmm. I like these, just the sort of rubber silicone ring that you wear. It's a symbol. It's just more comfortable on your hand. But she's
I've
like,
I've never heard of this.
You've never heard of this?
No, it's great. I just, you know, you young people today, I don't know what you're up to.
Oh, okay. Because, well, you know, if I were to go, let's say, if I was to go whale on my pecs at the gym, which could definitely use some whaling these days. If you're wearing an actual gold or silver or platinum ring, you know, it can get scuffed up and it can get kind of, you know, it clinks against the metal. Whereas with this, you can go and lift. But then she's like, well, are you just going to wear it for the gym only? Or are you going to wear it all the time? And this is kind of, you know, look, I didn't even wear a tie at my wedding. So I'm just increasingly approaching this functional comfort for everything in life. I think functional comfort is essential. I'm waging a one man war against the necktie. I will tell everybody, suits are not suits for men. I have custom made suits, only a couple of them, but not comfortable. They're not as comfortable as other things that I can just wear.
And I think you're right. on ties. My husband is over ties also. We were just talking about my daughter's having a bat mitzvah soon. None of the men in my family are wearing a tie.
Some fun history for everybody listening. The tie is a holdover from the court of Louis XIV, who hired a corps of mercenaries from Croatia. They were called the Hrvati. And one way that they would distinguish themselves, this is when battlefield distinguishing was much more important than battlefield camouflage, which also is why you had, for example, the Landsknechts of Germany, who had very brightly colored clothing. And that became, in a battle, imagine somebody with bright orange and red and, you know, green. Mm-hmm. And they would also wear a very prominent codpiece, which there's a whole Freudian aspect to that, I guess. But the but back to Louis XIV, the Landsknechts, by the way, saved first siege of Vienna. Talk about that another time. You know, Christendom was about to get overrun by the forces of the Ottoman Empire. But you go to Louis XIV, and he hired the Hrvati to be in the service of the French military, and they wore a brightly colored cloth around their neck, which came to be known as a cravat, or the French cravat, the necktie. And so now, hundreds of years later, I'm supposed to have some, you know, some torture device around my neck on a hot day down in Florida because people say it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
No, you lead the way on this. Thank you. That's right.
Thank you. I like that you think this, because people are like, oh, they're horrified at this. I'm like, look, I think the cut of clothing and looking good and all that is, you know, is a good thing, right? People should try. But I also think that another one, Carol, women who are telling me all the time how much
rubber ring, no necktie.
You know, another one. No, but this is for the ladies out there that wear the super painful shoes and they're walking.
Oh,
I'm like, look,
if you're right there,
you see, this is crazy to me. You know, I used to be a single man. I would go on dates and I would be told, oh, let's get a drink, you know, around the corner. It's two blocks away in New York City. Mm-hmm. And they'd say, you know, oh, well, can we get an Uber? I'm like, no, it's two blocks away. We're going to get a car. They go, oh, but these shoes, they got like the Louboutin, you know, the red soles or whatever. So you like the uncomfortable shoes.
I love high heels. I'm all about it. And it's funny because I like love posting when we go, you know, you've seen me do this. When we go out, we get a picture. I'm always like, get the shoes in the picture. And that's, you know, it makes a better picture, but also I love my shoes. Turns out there's this like creepy subset online of like men who look for like women's feet, that I can't be showing off my shoes as often. But you know, I like the nice shoes and they're not always going to be comfortable. And some of them I refer to as sitting shoes. Sometimes I wear a sitting shoe.
See, so, for special events.
You can do your rubber ring and your no necktie. You stay away from my Louboutins.
I sound like a bum. And the more I look, by the way, back at myself, the camera, I'm like, wow, this really does look like a Zelensky t-shirt. I got to change this up a little bit. Okay, fair enough. Next time I'm going to wear a shirt with a collar because that's somehow fit. I also love telling people all the time about, not that I'm some fat, I love history. I'm not a fashion guy, but all of the different fashion trends that actually come to us from the military is that in itself. And there probably is a book about this, but somebody should write it. You know, people walk around in trench coats. Like, why do they call it a trench coat? Well, gee, you know, but I mean, there's so much more than that. I mean, even the British in khaki, and where does Madras come from, and all these different things. It's all tied into
camo remains very hip with the kids.
Oh yeah. Well, of course, camouflage is very much a fashion trend, but there's so much of it. Anyway, I don't want to turn this into a whole, I do have a fun one for you. So you ready for this one? And then I promise we'll stop talking fashion, but you're like a very fashionable lady. Whenever I go out, there's a group of us that goes out in South Florida together. We'll all hang out, and Carol, and there'll be a big squad of conservative media people. You know, one, everybody loves Carol, and two, you know, she's just, you know, she's got some fashion sense. You know, the rest of us were a little, I'm dressed like I'm a little Zelensky wannabe over here.
yeah, but your wife, she dresses real good.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah, no, she knows. Yeah. That's why you two sit together and you look at the peasants across the table. You know, the guys that were all out. You know. You know, because you know who rocks the comfortable stuff? Your husband, I got to say. He likes to look, he likes to be a comfortable guy too. We're together. I've never seen him in a necktie. Does he do the necktie?
Oh, no. No, he does not do neckties. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah. You and him.
Yeah, we're together on this one.
He does not care.
We have solidarity. So the tricorn hat, though, you know, we always think of, if someone puts on a tricorn hat, they think, oh, like George Washington, the American Revolution, you know, the. So it's fascinating because people think it's the most American of things. And in a sense, it is. But the tricorn hat actually comes to us because of Spanish mercenaries fighting in Flanders, modern day Belgium. And they had this wide Spanish hat that would get in the way when they were doing maneuvers with their muskets. And so they began to flip up the brim on both sides so that when they were on parade ground and moving their rifle around, it wouldn't actually knock the hat off their head. And then that became a style. And the British were fighting against them, saw this and realized that makes sense. They started the tricorn hat, which we obviously got from the British in the first place. And that is now as American as apple pie, except it comes from Spanish mercenaries. So
I'm going to play this podcast for my history-loving nine-year-old. I think this is the only one he'll ever want to listen to. But I imagine he'll give you at least one. Well, actually, that's not what happened. This is what happened.
Nice. Well, that's fine. That's fair. Yeah. I will say, if he wants to nerd out, you got to give him the Buck Sexton show, Shields High, where we do the real Dracula, the history of Vlad Dracul from the 16th century. Fascinating guy. Fascinating period of history. I did the Siege of Malta, the fall of Constantinople. I sit around doing these things, which is probably why I don't. Yeah, I'll send them to you. If your son really loves history, they're very.
He would love to talk about it, listen to it. He's like crushing these history competitions. Yeah,
I'll send it to him. And then he can send his critique and you can give it to me gently so that I, you know, afterwards won't feel sad about myself. But I was going to ask the CNN effect that's coming out. But MyPillow. Do you have MyPillows, by the way? Do I need to hook you up with some MyPillows? Do you not have them?
I don't have any. No.
All right. I'm going to take care of that. No. And the Giza Dream sheets. Right. The Giza Dream sheets are amazing. Pillows, mattress covers, sheets, all this stuff is phenomenal from Mike Lindell's MyPillow. And I've been sleeping on the Giza Dream sheets for years. Carrie loves them. Carol, she's going to love them too. Trust me, the Giza Dream sheets are amazing. They come in as low as $29.98 when you use promo code BUCK. It's time to update your sheets, friends, because, you know, they get worn and kind of, you know, tired after a while. Giza Dream sheets come from a region of cotton named of the same name, Giza, of course. Incredibly soft. You're going to love it. And they're very breathable, but extremely durable. They look good. They feel good. Get some Giza Dream sheets. MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. You get 8 weeks of every night sleeping on these sheets to make sure your purchase is great. So just go to MyPillow.com, click on Radio Listener Specials, check out this flash sale on the Giza Dream sheets. That's MyPillow.com. Click on Radio Listener Specials, check out the flash sale on Giza Dream sheets, and use my name, Buck, as the promo code, or just call this number, 800-792-3269. All right, so I'd mentioned this, I'd promoted this, the CNN effect. Here's what I say it is, as somebody who had previously worked there. I used to be able to have conversations with liberals about things that I disagreed with them on. And I still would be willing to do that, by the way. And I've co-hosted shows with left-wing people, with self-described, you know, Marxists. I'm fine with that. I feel, though, that now, even still in the era of Biden, it is very hard to have a conversation. And this is why I say it's a CNN effect, because anytime you turned on CNN, it was Trump. There was something Trump-related. You know, if an asteroid hit the Earth. And you know, there was like a barn caught on fire in 2019. It was like Trump fails to prevent asteroid. I mean, it was a psychosis. Yeah.
I mean, that's the balloon story.
Yeah. That psychosis to me has continued. Like, even though he's not president anymore, I try to talk to a Democrat about anything and it reverts to Trump right away. I do think it's like a mental illness, Pardon me. I can't speak. There's some problem.
Yeah, no, I think they were deeply damaged by Donald Trump winning. I mean, you were in New York the day after he won the election in 2016, right? Do you remember anything about that day?
Oh, yeah.
The day after he won?
There were 2 days I was in New York City that reminded me of it. The day after Hurricane Sandy hit and Donald Trump's election fell. I wasn't there for 9/11. I was in college. But the day after Hurricane Sandy and the day after Trump won, the feel, the energy on the streets, exactly the same. Just shock.
Shock. It was a rainy day. People were walking around as if like a meteor had hit and it was Donald Trump's fault. It was really just amazing to watch it. It was like their lives had ended. And at the time, I really, not that I didn't want Trump to win. I preferred him over Hillary Clinton, but I really didn't like him. And I thought that he was going to be a terrible president. And I just, you know, but I was like, all right, well, Donald Trump won. What are you going to do? That's, you know, that's good, whatever. And people were just stunned. And I don't think that they ever got over it. I think that they just were traumatized by it. They expected to win in such a way that that shock when you don't win something that you thought you were going to win, it didn't go away. They didn't. It lasted years for them. It's interesting that you call it the CNN effect, because I feel like CNN has, you mentioned that you can't talk to liberals anymore. And then it's like, you know, but CNN used to have shows where liberals and conservatives talk to each other, right?
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but they can't do that anymore, partially because of wokeness. Wokeness says you cannot engage conservatives in honest conversation. And that's also what they're doing. They're shutting down the honest conversation. They're just saying, but Trump. And that makes us finding common ground so much harder, because they only have this one thing that they go to, and you end up having to defend Donald Trump and everything he's ever done.
Yeah, I think that it has become a form of a psychosis. There's something about the circuitry of liberal brains now where, look, it's obviously not the case with everybody, but it's enough of a situation, or it's common enough that I think it is a dominant. I think it is the majority of the Democrats that I try to engage with in any capacity now.
Yeah.
If I say, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't be teaching queer theory in an African-American studies program in Florida, which, you know, that just came up and they ended up reverting and not having that in the curriculum, people will say to me, oh, so, you know, you just think that, like, what Trump says about CRT, and I'm like, what are we doing? Like, how do we? And that's why I get worried, Carol, because when you see, you know, mass movements like bankruptcy, like so many things, it happens suddenly. I mean, it happens slowly, then suddenly. Right. It grows over time. And I've seen a mass movement inside of America where people who think of themselves as very discerning, very intelligent, and very good people, actually, who are leftists, who are Democrats, liberals, progressives, whatever they want to call themselves. I call them commies, and I don't mean that, you know, in a nice way. But they will go along with things now that it's not possible for a human being who is capable of independent thought to go along with. And this has become commonplace.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And are you talking about people on Twitter, or are these like people in your like everyday life?
Both. Yeah.
Okay. Because I find that the people in my everyday life, even the people on the left, are way more troubled by where the left is going, even if they are themselves pretty far left. Even if really there are so many ways that they are on the left, and then suddenly they're a women's study degree. What does it really mean when we don't know what a woman is?
Right.
And they're challenged by it. They don't know how to handle it. They don't know what to say. And they don't have the easy line that somebody online, you know, on the internet has, where like everyone who doesn't agree with them is a TERF, you know?
Right. Intellectually, I do think it's interesting that it's not a problem for a person who is of the right, broadly speaking, to break with the right on some issues. They'll be like, yeah, whatever, you know, screw them. I don't care. Oh, the Republican Party says, you know, I don't care. I think this, I think they're wrong on the following. Every single conservative I know has a number of issues where, you know, they break with the base, or they don't like, you know, whether it's they don't like the, you know, globalist Paul Ryan Republicans, or they do. And you know, whatever, there are these areas where they'll just have this separation. And I do think, though, that the left, very much like a cult or a totalitarian state, there's a constant fear of saying the imperfect thing that will get them in trouble with their own side.
Right.
And on gender issues, by the way, that's more prominent, I think, than anywhere else.
Well, the whole thing is with cancel culture is that a lot of it was left on left. It wasn't necessarily the left coming for conservatives. I mean, it is in some ways, like you have the bake the cake story, you know, out of Colorado. So they do target sort of, you know, non-leftists. But for the most part, it was like, you wrote something that I don't like. And if you're on the left, you end up apologizing. And then it's like, well, you get into that spiral where it's never going to be enough. Remember that book, Dirt? This woman wrote this book that was a really celebrated American Dirt, very celebrated book. But then it turned out that she wrote about Mexican drug smugglers, and she herself was not a Mexican. So she had to apologize. And I think they ended up actually not having any public relations for the book at all, because, you know, she had obviously committed the worst sin in history writing about a culture that was not her own. But how would a conservative writer handle that? They'd be like, okay, and I, so what? Yeah, I did that and I'll do it again. And we don't really care as much about their targeting. But once you bend to them at all, you're going to keep bending all the time.
That's what we've seen up to this point. And obviously the progression is always request for tolerance and then push for acceptance and then demands for celebration. Right. Yep. It always is on the same progressives, where at first it's just, let's just all be cool to each other. Right. And that, mm-hmm. and that's one of the things that frustrates me so much about the approach of the left is that I think on pronouns, for example, and people say this is small. It is not small. The same way it's not small to switch from illegal alien to illegal immigrant to undocumented because, you know, now at this point, it's like, well, let's just give them documents. Like, what do we need immigration for? Right. I mean, the whole process is undermined by the language itself. The concession of I'm going to use someone's preferred pronouns. They have used the desire of people on the right to be polite and to be kind in order to get compliance on that issue, for example. And then people get very confused because they go, hold on a second. Why does it feel like we're losing this argument when the other side is crazy? Because you're conceding the argument. I mean, every time I see a story about a transgender individual in the Daily Mail and even sometimes on FoxNews.com, it refer to a he as a she.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because I think my feeling would have been in general, use somebody's preferred pronoun, but obviously I'm not using they and I'm not using anything invented and I'm not using any of the new ones. But you're absolutely right where it's never enough. It's never like, okay, I'll use your preferred pronoun. Well, now I need you to use the one that I just came up with today. And I'm no longer the pronoun that you thought I was yesterday. And now I'm something new and now I'm plural and et cetera. And yeah, it never ends. And the thing is that it's not just people on the right that know this. It's just the people on the left are terrified to be canceled and speak out and have their jobs targeted. And in some ways they deserve it, right? Like they let this happen to their side, but it is still sort of hard to watch people not be able to speak.
I want to ask you about some lessons from the married world, Carol, now that I have entered these ranks. And also I want to get us into some maybe some hot water by talking about what the kids, and I mean the youth, you know, the young people today need to know about relationships and truth and society and all the rest. Because now that I'm a married guy, now I feel like I can lecture everybody on everything. Just be like, hey, hold on a second.
Sure. Yeah, you know,
when it comes to the young ones, you know what I mean? The young bloods out there that think that, you know, it's just all a big party. Oh, no, I'm here to tell them about other things. But I got to take a moment for our sponsor here, which does incredible work, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation honors fallen and severely injured heroes and their families with mortgage-free homes. It's such critical work. This year alone, hundreds of Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and our nation's most severely injured veterans and first responders are receiving homes. More than 500 homeless veterans received housing and services last year, and more than 1,500 are receiving housing and services this year. This coming Memorial Day, all the brave men and women lost since 9/11 in the war on terror are having their names read aloud in a Tunnel to Towers ceremony in our nation's capital. Through the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute, the foundation is educating kids in kindergarten through 12th grade about our nation's darkest day. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Please help America to never forget its greatest heroes. Join me in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2t.org. All right, Carol. You know, now there's a great, do you know Nate Bargatze, the comedian?
Oh my God, my favorite. I rave about him all the time. He's such a fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan too. It's so nice to, it's funny because it's amazing to see that a brand, the same way today, there are people whose brands in journalism is that they actually do journalism. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like they're not actually a propagandist or a partisan activist for one side or the other. They'll tell the stories that need to be told and they don't really care. And look, they're not perfect, but that's a fair assessment of what their approach to their work is. Nate Bargatze is just a comedian. He's actually trying to tell jokes that make people laugh, that anyone can laugh at, that are funny. I think he does a great job, but he does this thing where he says,
that you might not notice yet about him, but you hopefully will down the road. All of his specials are super kid friendly. No cursing, no like sexual, anything. Really, like my 12-year-old daughter loves him. We watch like his clips all the time. We watched all three specials. He's just family friendly. It's so weird to be hilarious and family friendly.
Yeah, he does such a good job. But he has a thing where when you're 41 or 43, you're like, do you see the memory? You're 43 and you're like, yeah, like I could hang out with the 20 somethings, you know, but like when you see some guy's 45, you're like, whoa, old man, like get out of here, you know, because your whole perception changes. Now that I'm married, I turn around and everybody out there under 40 in single world, I just want to, you know, shake my walker or my walking stick, my cane in their face, you know, yell, get off my lawn, and say, you know, what are all you kids doing out there with the crazy, the messaging and the what they're teaching women in society today about how to conduct their private lives is, I think, is super destructive. It's super destructive at a civilizational level. I think that it's, something that needs to really be dealt with in a serious way as part of an urgent conversation. I think that basically to be a Democrat or a leftist feminist woman in America today is to put yourself on an almost certain path to misery. That is my basic contention.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I think that women are lied to more than anyone else in terms of relationships. And I think that they're taught to not ask for what they want. The idea that they can just date around and not care about it. Women are different than men. And what's interesting to me is that, you know, it comes from the left, this whole idea of like, why would you want to get married? You want to pursue your career. I've never met a woman, and I think you and I maybe even disagreed on this once, but I've never met a woman who actually pursued a career over a man. I know that there are women who pursued a career and didn't get married. That happens. But there's plenty of women who did not pursue a career and didn't get married. I've never met a woman who was on a good career path who didn't also want to get married. But it just they tell them that it doesn't matter, that you can be strong and amazing alone and you don't need a man. What do you need a man for? You could open your own jars. And it's just the wrong message. And they teach that relationships are lame and boring and only, you know, the worst people want to be in them. You want to be single and free. And then when a woman realizes that that's all a lie, a lot of times it's too late.
Here's my contention. I don't know if we've talked about this. I think the show Sex and the City, as clever and entertaining as it was, is... it's almost as though the commies were trying to come up with a way to infiltrate American culture and society to destroy male female relationships from within, you know, to just have the whole thing implode on itself. Right. To me, that show is a very entertaining, pithy roadmap to misery for, and you know, as somebody who lived in New York basically his whole life till I moved to Florida, I just saw it. I saw it all over the place, and I would see these women. Go ahead.
Yeah. My counter to that would be that eventually all of them got married and settled down. The lie in that show is that it's so easy to find the right person as a woman when you're in your late 30s, late 40s in that show. And that it's just, you know, you're Samantha and you're a high powered PR executive and you marry like the hottest man anybody's ever seen. And that he's going to just be super all about you, even though you're in your 50s and he's in his 20s and that's going to make sense. That generally does not happen. So that's the kind of lies that show told. I think that, but the thing is that they all did eventually kind of settle down into relationships, and that's ultimately what they wanted.
Well, you know, I guess not to get too into this because it's like, why do I know so much about this show? I mean, the main character never really does, right? As we know, and then the movies were made, and not that I saw the movies, but, you know, she ends up, she kind of does and she kind of doesn't. But just the chasing of these career first lives that they have. And the one character who doesn't really, you know, the brunette, I can't really. I can't really remember her name. But anyway, her whole thing. And now people are like, why does Buck still think about Sex and the City? It was very popular on HBO when I was, high school age. Everybody was watching it. I mean, it was a show that Beverly Hills 90210, HBO, Sex and the City on HBO. I mean, these were the shows that everybody was watching.
Yeah.
And I see all these women. I mean, I remember when I graduated from Amherst and there were all these women who were rushing off to go work at Goldman Sachs and, you know, from my class. And I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, I'm a guy. if I want to spend my 20s, and I went to the CIA and, you know, then did some other kind of crazy stuff, but that was my choice. But if I was going to spend my 20s making a lot of money, which is what people go into invest in banking for, this may be a shock, and not so much anymore, but this, you know, 20 years ago was what people were doing. I would assume that I'm mortgaging my 20s at some level. Like, I'm just going to burn out as much as I can, get as much work done, get as far as I can, and make as much money as I can, and develop as much prestige from the competency that I have as I can. So then at 30 or 35 or even 40 or even 45, I can turn around and have my choice of mates. And I just feel like no one ever stopped to tell the women who showed up at Goldman Sachs, or and not just a, you know, any big firm or corporate law, whatever, at any of these places, hey, you're 23 or 24. If you do this for the next 10 years and this is really your focus, your life choices are changed forever. Just understand that.
Yeah. So here's another way that the left destroys the path for women. If you are one of these women and you go into this high powered, high energy and high earning environment, it would be great to meet a man there, except men now can't hit on you in the workplace because they'd be sexual predators and you're not allowed to date at work. And there's all these, you know, issues around that. But meeting somebody at work used to make a lot of sense. And if you wanted to meet somebody who was a go-getter at Goldman Sachs, there's really not a better place to meet them than at Goldman Sachs. So it's, again, the left is destroying the idea of relationships for these women when that's ultimately what they're going to want.
Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-G-O-L-D. The number one fantasy sports app in America is Prize Picks. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. 5 million members already active on Prize Picks. If you've not yet downloaded Prize Picks, do it today. Unlike other apps, on Prize Picks, it's just you against the number. It's about the players and not the teams. You look for the sports you know best and that you follow the most. Then you make a single decision on each player projection, more or less. Every time you play, you pick 2 to 6 players and make that one decision. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 picks. More player action on Prize Picks now than ever, and it's the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states now. Prize Picks also gives you injury insurance, so your picks stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. Download the free Prize Picks app and open your account. Use my name, Clay, for a first deposit match up to $100. Download the Prize Picks app. Use promo code CLAY, that's C-L-A-Y, to get set up and get a deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Who's there for heroes or the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is severely injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans and who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who. The Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families.
The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America in so many ways. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year, dozens of golf outings, and the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institutes, educating kids in K through 12 grades to help our nation keep its vow to never forget.
More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
And I do see a rise in a willingness among conservatives in general now to speak with much more forcefulness about gender roles and about what's going to make for a long-term happy plan and, you know, what society, right? There's everyone, look, there's always going to be somebody who just wants to travel the world and write books, and that's fine. Yeah. It's not that people shouldn't have freedom and choice, male, female, or whatever, but it's what does society offer as a path that should be replicated in as great a frequency as possible to create the most happy, productive, and stable society possible, right? I mean, you know, every policy is going to have exceptions. Everything in the macro, when you break it down to an individual level, is going to have cases that are different. That's fine. But people say, whoa, do you think priests are throwing their lives away or, you know, whatever, because obviously they don't marry. It's like, no, obviously there are people that don't need to go down this pathway.
Absolutely.
But the other pathway that they're told about, which is just, and it's for women, I'll tell you, it's for guys too. It's not good. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that telling people to spend their 20s partying, drinking, and having sex with as many women as they possibly can, which is what socially successful males are basically told to do. Not necessarily as many as possible, but, you know, there's a lot of that that goes on. That's not actually helpful for society and for those individuals. I think later on, and people say, oh, you know, again, I've been married for 2 days, and so now all of a sudden I'm an expert in everything. But I've known this stuff. I've known this stuff for a long time.
Mm-hmm. I'm coming up on 14 years, so I can definitely play the expert here. Men are lied to also. But again, like you said, the man's window is just wider. And that's the only reason that the men get away with it more than the women do. There's plenty of men who have been destroyed by that culture and who find themselves alone and maybe want to get married, but don't know how to connect. And they spent their 20s just messing around with random girls. And it is harder for them to find the right person for themselves. So one of the other ways that the left tells women that they have to like certain things, that they can't like other things. And I just don't think that men get the same message. That show Mad Men, you know, about the ad executives on Madison Avenue in the 60s, there was the character played by John Hamm, and he was like this hard drinking, chain smoking, womanizing, just jerk. And all these liberal magazines would write these like tee hee hee pieces about how attracted they were to the character Don Draper and how they knew that they weren't supposed to be. But men don't really have that. You don't really have the like, I'm attracted to the cocktail waitress, but I feel so bad about it. But the left makes women feel bad about what they're attracted to. And that's crazy. What you're attracted to is what you're attracted to. And the fact that, you know, Don Draper did it for so many women is a sign that they liked a more powerful guy and that you weren't supposed to like him and you knew you weren't supposed to like him is what the left enforces here.
So you used to live in Brooklyn, so you know plenty of people on the left. And you're cool. So you have cool left-wing friends. Did any of your cool left-wing female friends, to your knowledge, actually think that a guy that was interested in them romantically, who described himself as a male feminist, was doing himself any favors?
I think the ones that I knew knew that any male feminist was likely just trying to get in their pants. But you know, I know that there's a wider world where the male feminist does enjoy some, you know, perks of being a male feminist. I lived in a commune in Scotland where everybody was a male feminist. And yeah, the ones who could successfully argue their case and make it seem like they weren't just after one thing did quite well with the ladies.
It's just stunning, stunning the scams that people could pull off. Do you think that there's a room or a necessity even for the right and for the Republican Party to really start to articulate a family and, traditional family values agenda? Again, I feel like it fell off. I used to hear about this all the time in the 90s. Oh, you know, traditional family values. Yeah. People talk about Phyllis Schlafly and how she defeated the Equal Rights Amendment. And there was all this discussion of focus on the family, support the family. It fell off. And it does feel like now the left and the Democrat Party is just at its core run by a lot of unhappy, you know, cat ladies with blue hair and nose rings.
Right. And I think there should be, but it has to be done in a cooler way. I mean, social media just changed everything. So now the left has on social media, like, you know, polyamory is very popular on social media. And you have these couples like arguing on social media how, you know, monogamy is so out and it's so outdated. And it's like, do you think you're the first people to try this? Like, do you think that throughout civilizations, they haven't considered the idea of being with multiple partners? You're not that unique. And yet you think that you've come up with this new idea that's going to work for only you and nobody else, you know, throughout history. And the fact is, it never works. And that's why people settle onto monogamy. It's not because we don't have the imagination to consider having multiple partners. It's because it's always a fail. And so I think the right should target this kind of messaging and show relationships as being a positive thing. If relationships are always a downer, I can see why the marriage rate is decreasing. But, you know, even beyond just the marriage rate, which is a problem, and the birth rate, you know, declining is a giant problem. People are having fewer relationships. They're having fewer friendships. All of this is very bad for our society, and it needs to be turned around, and it has to be turned around in a smart way. And social media really should be utilized in this pursuit.
Do you think, I think it's Professor Scott Galloway at NYU who, you know, spits fire about Trump and says a lot of things, I think, about the right in general that are not not intelligent and not well thought out. But he does say some things on social, broader social issues. You know the guy I'm talking about, by the way? He's started to pick up a lot of steam. He's been on Bill Maher recently. There are TikToks and things like that with him. But he talks about what he calls Porsche polygamy. And he says that in the world of dating apps, which, you know, everyone's always walking around coming up with their story for how they met their person that is not, we met on a dating app. It's kind of funny, right? When you realize right now, I mean, it's gone to the point where if you're not on dating apps, actually, you're almost not in the dating pool if you're a single person, because there's just such a change in, people don't go to nightclubs anymore the same way.
And they can't do, meet at work. That's it. You know,
because it works, and because this is. Well, but you also,
no, I'm saying,
have,
they can't meet at work. They're not allowed to meet at work anymore, which is where you used to house,
yeah, they're
you
not. You're, oh no, you're definitely. It's very suspect. I mean, I for example, I've never dated anybody at a company. Never mind like a direct report or anything like that. I've never dated anybody at a company where I have been an employee, with the exception of the CIA. But like that's, you know, like that's like going to a, that's enormous, and you know there's, you want to think about the CIA is, if you don't want to see the person you're dating with the CIA again, you never will, because you know who knows what they're going to send next. But in a you know, even there were very kind of strict rules about reporting requirements and things like that if you had a relationship internally, you know, in the same office or anything like that. I just think that you have this situation where women are being, and maybe now this is getting to more contentious territory, women are being trained to think like men in their dating selection. And you see, so Galloway talks about Porsche progressivism, or Porsche polygamy, where he says that 80% of the women have an interest in only 20% of the men, basically. Mm-hmm. That you have this, and that women are, not, instead of choosing for things that require more of a relationship basis to understand. I know the flip side of this, women will say, but men are so superficial, which brings us to the, yes, men are more superficial about women's appearance than women. This is the way it has been in all of human history until now. But you have all these women who are saying, I won't date a guy who's under 6'2" and I want a guy with a six pack, and I want a guy with like lots of tattoos all over his arms and these sorts of things. And that this is creating a society where 30% of men, I think he said, this is again from Scott Galloway, 30% of men under 30 haven't had a sexual relationship in the last year. That's mind blowing.
Right. And are the women having sexual relationships? Because it seems like the 80% can't be just sleeping with the 20%, right? So, you know, it's funny. You're right. Men do go for looks more than, you know, women do, or have. Maybe that's changing now. But women used to go for security. And I don't think that was a bad thing. I don't think, you know, women choosing partners who are not going to be bad to them is a bad thing. I don't know. I really don't understand the concept that I see a lot on social media now, where the woman only wants the guy who doesn't want her. And that makes no sense to me. That's like, I can't imagine liking somebody who does not like me. That just does not compute at all. And that's like what's happening now, that they're being kind of trained to like the ones who will never like them back.
I also think that there's this again, there's this desire to treat men and women as though they're the same, whether it's in sports now and all this stuff, that there's this same, this enforced sameness that does not exist. Men and women process sexual relationships differently emotionally. I know people say, oh, I know women that get, you know, they can sleep with 100 guys and it's a, no, actually, it really is just not true. And they can tell themselves this as much as they want, but the psychological toll on women of conducting themselves this way, and I've seen it from plenty of women that I know and plenty of women that I know who never get, and the number, it would be stunning, I think, to the people in the rest of the country, the number of really good looking, really interesting and compelling in a whole range of ways, women in New York City, 35 to 45, that are not married, will probably never get married, and will probably never have children, I think would blow the minds of people who don't live in, you know, DC or LA or, you know, San Francisco.
Yeah, I think that big cities have the worst problem of telling women what they should be interested in and what they should be looking for, and how that really doesn't fit in with what women are and what we actually feel and all those other things. You're right. We're not the same. I don't know why we need to be the same. I don't want to be like a man. You guys are just not that great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we kind of smell sometimes.
Yeah. The men smell amazing.
You know, we all got man thighs, you know, which we're not, you know, women are constructed for beauty and aesthetics and, you know, the, you know, you're all Aphrodites, you know, you're all God's gift and creating the next generation and all.
That's right.
And guys, you know, we can dress like Zelensky when we don't even mean to. And things like that can happen.
We're married. You don't have to try anymore.
That's right. I didn't say that out loud, did I? So everybody should go get Carol's book, which you should get on Amazon or wherever you get fine books, Stolen Youth. And
coming out March 7th.
Coming out March 7th, and also New York Post columnist Carol Markowitz, and also one of the people that helped convince me to move to Florida. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you for coming. We're really happy to have you. I thank you in the acknowledgments of the book. I thank the Florida crew.
Oh, nice. I'm very honored to get an acknowledgment as part of the Florida crew. So we're going to save America, and Carol is one of the key people in that process. Carol, thank you so much for being with us, sharing some wisdom. We'll have you back soon.
Thanks so much.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
Stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on,
but we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.